A big challenge that we see in practice is that a lot of patients are skipping meals or eating too little on GLP-1 medications. And many times they initially see that as a good thing because it's easier for them to eat less. And then they're almost happy that they're able to skip meals, or they kind of forget to eat at times if they don't have the right strategy in place. However, I remind them that this is not the goal. The goal is not to eat as little as possible, but to eat properly. Yes, portions will be smaller, but being on a regular schedule is really important.
Welcome to the GLP-1 Podcast Show, a monthly podcast where you'll find cutting-edge insights and all that's working in the world of metabolic health and obesity care. Our aspiration is to be the first place you are going to go to find out what's happening, the latest updates, and the latest research in GLP-1 science and clinical practice.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the GLP-1 podcast show hosted by Wisethetics. I'm your host, Arisha Moyes. And today I'm joined here with Melissa Mitri, who is a registered dietitian, weight loss expert, and owner of Melissa Mitri Nutrition. So I'm going to give her the floor and let her introduce herself and a little bit of her work.
Yeah, thanks so much, Arisha. I'm so happy to be here and to have this conversation today. So a little bit about myself. I'm a registered dietitian. I've been a dietitian for close to 20 years now. And so I work in the weight management space. I work with a lot of clients taking GLP-1 medications. And I'm also a freelance writer. And so I write on for a lot of publications on GLP-1 and weight management related topics. And so I'm excited to be here to share my knowledge and my more real world experience working with clients as well.
Okay, amazing. Perfect. So yeah, like I was talking to Melissa a little bit before we started recording, and I was telling her our earlier episodes are very science heavy. We're talking a lot about the history of the peptide, GLP-1, and also a lot of the clinical trial data. So I'm excited today to kind of delve into the real world usage of these drugs. And you said you've been doing this for 20 years. So I'm sure you've seen the evolution, right? So when they first came on the market in 2005 for diabetes, and now moving past that to obesity. So I'm really excited to talk to you today. It's really a privilege. So I guess we'll start off just with like kind of the basic. So someone walks into your clinic and they're saying, or they want to start a GLP or they're curious about it. How does that first conversation kind of look like nutritionally? How's your approach different from, you know, standard weight loss counseling?
Yeah. So definitely these medications have changed sort of the landscape and the way that the conversations go and some of the nutrition recommendations as well. And so really more the biggest focus is on nutritional density in diet versus calorie counting. And I would say that at the very, basic level, that's where I would start with clients. And it's definitely a very different mindset than what a lot of people are used to when we think about weight management, since that is my specialty. When I have clients coming to see me, they're automatically thinking I need to, you know, reduce my calories, which of course is still needed. You still need to be in a calorie deficit to have weight loss. However, it's a bigger importance on what the person is eating and their overall schedule. Because these medications are reducing appetite so much, it's very important for our patients to be focusing on the nutritional density of their foods. So meaning everything that they're eating and the majority of what they're eating should be nutritious foods, because their portions are going to be much smaller without them really having to try as hard to do that. And so it's a big shift in mindset for patients and for practitioners as well. So when I think about kind of the trajectory of how things have changed and evolved over time, in the past, I worked in the bariatric space. And so I worked with a lot of patients that were going through bariatric surgery. And a lot of the diet sort of principles and recommendations are somewhat similar to a person that is undergoing bariatric surgery, which is still a very popular method for weight management now. And that, again, it's focused on the small portions, but really nutrient-dense foods, because just like a patient going through bariatric surgery, their stomach is much smaller, their appetite is much smaller, and so what they eat is even more important.
Wisenetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access wisenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of parallels between bariatric surgery and GLP-1 usage, given like the substantial weight loss observed. So it makes sense that like some of the counseling is similar. But I do know that GLP-1s work by kind of suppressing your appetite cues. So how do you guide patients on like basically eating or structuring their eating? You know, they don't feel that urge to want to eat. So does the meal timing matter? Like, are you giving them specific times, you know, you should be eating this and like during these times, like a standard breakfast, lunch, dinner situation? Does the size matter, how much they're eating, and what kind of schedule tends to work best for these patients?
Yeah, so definitely it's a case-by-case basis. It is individualized depending on the person's typical schedule and preferences and lifestyle. However, in general, I do help patients follow some sort of a meal schedule, because a big challenge that we see in practice is that a lot of patients are skipping meals or eating too little on GLP-1 medications. And many times they initially see that as a good thing because it's easier for them to eat less. And then they're almost happy that they're able to skip meals, or they kind of forget to eat at times if they don't have the right strategy in place. However, I remind them that this is not the goal. The goal is not to eat as little as possible, but to eat properly. Yes, portions will be smaller, but being on a regular schedule is really important. So what I often do and recommend is kind of just providing a suggested meal schedule for patients. And then the timing might look a little bit different depending on the person. But it's really going to be more smaller, frequent meals. So instead of, say, 2 to 3 small, larger meals a day, what somebody might be typically used to, it may be somewhere between 4 to 6 sort of mini meals, because the stomach, their appetite is very low. So they're not going to be able to, you know, they may have side effects, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but they may have more side effects if they're eating too much at once. Or they just don't have the desire to eat too much. And so it's kind of just mirroring, you know, how the medication is working and the mechanism behind that early satiety. So I often just create that schedule and have them print it out and keep it in their kitchen or somewhere they're going to remember, so they don't forget and they don't, you know, unintentionally skip a meal, which then, you know, really ends up backfiring, because then it's hard to play catch up later in the day.
It's interesting that you mentioned like, so they don't forget to eat, which to me sounds absurd. I don't think I would ever forget to eat. But it really does show how like the food noise that is associated with obesity, it's really reduced significantly, and it really does benefit a lot of these patients. So the side effects that you mentioned, that you kind of alluded to a little bit, do you have specific tips or nutritional strategies to help with these side effects? Like, I know they're mainly GI, so nausea, vomiting. So can you comment on this a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, it's mostly GI in nature are the most common side effects. So nausea, constipation, diarrhea are kind of the three most common types that we see. And just a quick note that, and a lot of clinicians may be aware of this if they're working with these patients, but the positive is that these side effects are usually more just in the beginning, as patients are first starting on these medications and as they're titrating the doses up, usually in the first 4 to 8 weeks. But during that time, it's really important to help manage these side effects as best as possible, so that patients don't, you know, end up coming off the medication or really, you know, having nutritional deficiencies because they're not able to eat properly with these side effects. And so kind of just quickly going back to the meal timing, and that is, so it's more what to eat, and also the timing of meals can make a difference in terms of mitigating some of these GI side effects. So just eating the smaller, more frequent meals alone can help mitigate these side effects, because if a patient is eating less at one time, they're going to be less likely to feel nauseous versus having a bigger meal, because maybe they're used to that or they're in an environment where there are larger meals in front of them. So perhaps using smaller plates so that it makes it easier for them to get in the habit of having the smaller meals, which can make a big difference. Also limiting certain types of foods and focusing more on other foods. So in terms of the foods to limit that might trigger side effects, definitely high fat foods. So not all fats are bad, but especially more fried foods, sort of greasy foods that somebody may purchase in a restaurant or in a fast food sort of setting. And then just overly heavy foods, like foods that have creamy sauces, cream-based sauces and things like that, because they're just going to be heavy. Fatty meats like bacon, et cetera, processed meats, because they're going to worsen that early satiety. So GLP-1s work to produce early satiety, which is helpful for people that are trying to eat less. But having too much fat in the diet is going to slow down that digestive process even further and exacerbate a lot of those GI side effects. So definitely going low on the fat intake is going to be really helpful. And if somebody is having some fat in the diet, focusing more on the healthier fats like avocados, nuts, in moderation, small portions. And then a few other things that are important to keep in mind is fiber. So I know we talk about protein so much, which is incredibly important. It's the most talked about nutrient when it comes to GLP-1s for many reasons, which we'll talk about. But fiber is equally as important. And I always talk about fiber with my clients because this can help mitigate a lot of the GI side effects. So if somebody is constipated, this is a very common side effect. Staying hydrated and increasing fiber intake gradually. So really emphasizing that fiber in the diet from fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, legumes, those should be increased gradually, because if somebody is not used to having a large amount of fiber, which the majority of the population is not eating enough, it's going to overload the gut and the body if somebody is increasing their fiber intake too quickly. So definitely starting out, if somebody is having, say, 15 grams a day, which is about half of what most of us need, then slowly adding, one to two fiber sources over a couple, a week or two, just so that the gut adjusts to it, with the goal of meeting that daily recommended intake of 25 to 30 grams. So fiber is very important, probably the one of the most important nutrients that can help reduce or prevent constipation. And also, if somebody is having diarrhea, then it doesn't mean that they can't have any fiber. It's just focusing more on the soluble fiber that's going to kind of bulk up the stool. So from oats and whole grains and foods like that versus broccoli and leafy green vegetables that are going to have more of the insoluble fiber that can worsen diarrhea. So the type of fiber matters depending on the side effect that a patient is experiencing. But in general, when somebody starts on a GLP-1, gradually increasing fiber intake is going to be beneficial.
So I think you were kind of alluding to this a little bit. So we're hearing a lot about the loss of lean body mass along with fat when patients are losing, these substantial amounts of weight. So this is a huge issue, muscle loss and sarcopenia, predominantly in older patients. So this is why you would supplement with the protein, I'm assuming. Are you seeing any other nutritional challenges or risks with GLP-1s? Or can you comment a little bit about also the osteoporosis aspect and things like that?
Yeah. So starting with the protein, so that's definitely a concern for all patients on GLP-1s or on a weight loss journey, and especially those, as you said, that are older adults, because they are more at risk of some of these sarcopenia, a lot of these conditions as they age from protein deficiency. And so when it comes to protein, starting with protein, again, kind of adding it, making sure that the patients, and this kind of goes back to the bariatric recommendations too, is sort of the sequencing and the order in which a patient is eating their nutrients. So we don't want to make it boring. We want to make it exciting and kind of put all the meal together for our patients. But when we think about the order, if somebody is having that early satiety, then eating the high protein foods first is going to be helpful, because if they get too full and they're not able to have it, then they might end up lacking in protein at the end of the day. So if they have their lean chicken or tofu or beans, those good protein sources, and eating those first to make sure that they get it in, that's a really good strategy. And also adding in supplements, shakes as needed in the beginning. It may not be needed forever, but if somebody has that really early satiety or is having any side effects that they can't really take in enough from food alone, then that's where protein shakes, powders, bars can be really helpful in between meals, just to supplement to ensure by the end of the day they're getting in enough without overloading themselves with too much food at one time. In terms of other potential nutritional risks for these patients, it's not just protein. So there's a lot of potential risk for different micronutrient deficiencies, vitamins and minerals. The biggest ones that we see in our practice and in the research, calcium, vitamin D, folate, iron is another big one. So those are kind of the top ones that we're seeing. And that's why it's really important to, one, look for the signs and symptoms of these deficiencies, which can vary depending on what the deficiency is, but often really extreme fatigue or hair loss, those are going to be some red flags that there might be a deficiency present, which can be present before a patient even starts on a GLP-1, which is why it really is best practice to obtain blood work, lab work right away as a baseline when somebody is starting a GLP-1 and then to monitor every few months thereafter. There's not really a specific consistent practice in place on how often prescribers are obtaining blood work from these patients, but it's something as a dietitian that I am always recommending, especially from the get-go, so that we know kind of this, a good starting point on what we need to focus on more.
Okay. So these vitamins and these minerals and like protein, fiber, these are really important to kind of prioritize because not only the muscle preservation, but also like the energy levels and like mm-hmm. your overall quality of life, right?
Yes, exactly.
And you had said to avoid fatty foods and things like that. Is there any foods that you would recommend that patients prioritize, or is it really like patient specific where they individualize it to their preferences or lifestyle?
Yeah. So I would say the biggest foods to prioritize would be the high protein, high fiber foods are kind of the two top priorities. And then the micronutrient rich foods. So those foods, really a lot of fruits and vegetables. It's really not all that different from what we'd recommend or an overall healthy diet, sort of a Mediterranean type of diet that includes a lot of lean proteins, fruits and vegetables and beans, because these are all going to be high in fiber and protein, which are the two most important nutrients for it. Also, these nutrients also stimulate, increase GLP-1 levels in the body naturally. So they help support the beneficial effects of the GLP-1 medication. And so that's just another sort of added benefit of focusing on those types of foods, because as we, many of us know, there are a lot of patients that are coming off of GLP-1 medications for various reasons when they haven't yet hit their weight loss goal. And so these types of foods are going to be even more important after they come off the medication, if that is needing to happen, to help them to feel full and to support the weight loss process beyond GLP-1s if needed.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned that, because we are hearing a lot of reports of, patients getting off of these drugs for a plethora of reasons, whether that's cost, whether that's tolerability. And since the drug works for one way suppressing the appetites, patients are scared that when the pharmacologically induced weight loss, appetite suppression is taken away, they're not going to have that control over their appetite anymore. And they're scared that it's going to lead to kind of a relapse in terms of eating habits. So do you help patients kind of build like long-term habits, or is there any advice you give them so they're not solely relying on medication even when they are taking them?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because I absolutely help them with building lifelong habits, whether they're on a GLP-1 or not, but especially if they're taking a GLP-1, because while these medications are incredibly effective, there are concerns in the long term, again, if somebody needs to come off of them or chooses to come off of them, or there are some cases where doses need to be changed, and the patient always becomes sort of, sort of adapts to the medication and hits a plateau. And so we're seeing some of that happening as well. So there's a lot of unknowns there. But nutrition is extremely important, and the healthy diet and lifestyle is just as important to complement the effects of the medication. So when I start working with a client that is considering a GLP-1 or is already taking one, we really work on kind of thinking like the long term, and really thinking about, what are the habits that we start now that we're going to continue for the long term, regardless if you are staying on this medication or not. And that is the focusing on the nutrient dense foods, the smaller portions, portion control, working on their environment and any of the other added sort of environmental or stressors in their life, all of these things that can affect how they eat and what they eat in different situations. Even if they're taking a GLP-1, if it's controlling their appetite, there still are cases where patients may be eating out of stress or for other reasons, and they're not physically hungry. And so these are all things that we still want to address in client sessions. And then also the other lifestyle components like adequate sleep and, again, stress management and exercise. So we talked about the protein part in terms of diet and building muscle, maintaining as much muscle as possible, but then doing the strength training and the regular exercise is equally as important. That's part of our conversation as well.
I like that you brought up a little bit of the psychological component, because I do know a lot of patients, or just people in general, we're not always eating for satiety, right? We also are very driven by the rewarding aspects of food, the pleasurable aspects. And a lot of the times people will eat out of frustration, they'll eat out of stress, it's a lot of emotional eating. So how do we kind of work on that? Like, how do we counsel patients that are, I guess, more affected by this?
So it's really kind of starting with, I like to kind of think, take a step back with patients and think about what might be leading to that. So every patient's situation is going to be a little bit different, and kind of talking about the emotions and the steps that typically lead to that type of eating. And it's not always a bad thing. Sometimes we're eating out of happy emotions. Sometimes it's celebratory and all those things. So, but it still can go overboard, where patients end up feeling overly full or uncomfortable. And especially if they're taking a GLP-1, you know, unpleasant side effects that come along with that. So, so it's taking that step back and kind of figuring out, like, what is leading, what are the situations or emotions that are leading to those habits, and how can they kind of, you know, backtrack and think about if, you know, some other things that they can do instead in that moment, or kind of changing the steps leading into that moment too, if it is more of a negative for them. So for example, if it's someone that is typically eating later at night because they're feeling stressed or they're finally relaxed, and that's a lifelong habit for them, then kind of thinking about other things that are not related to food that they can do instead during that time to just break that cycle. So they're replacing that habit with a new habit. And that's really often what is needed, not just stopping cold turkey, but finding another beneficial habit, such as reading an enjoyable book or taking a bath or calling a friend, doing something that's relieving that stress that is more beneficial to them. And it's going to be a more longer lasting benefit versus having something to eat that makes them feel good in the moment, but is really short-lived in terms of providing the benefits that they're looking for.
Right. So it's more so getting into the underlying causes that's behind mm-hmm. these reasons.
Exactly.
And also the environment. We were kind of discussed, you kind of mentioned that very briefly. I do think we live in a very increasingly obesogenic environment, as we call it. So the odds are kind of stacked against us. It's just this in our society, there's there's ultra processed foods, accessibility wise, fast food everywhere, but also in our culture, like we use food to celebrate. Like you said, it's celebratory. So there's not, sometimes it's difficult for us to control that, right? So how can patients kind of set them up in a way to kind of optimize the weight loss and just the nutritional benefits via their diet when, like, it's not always in their control?
Right. Yeah. So this is something that, you know, it's really, it comes down to just planning, doing a little bit of planning ahead of time and sort of strategizing for those situations. So for example, now that we're, you know, in the holiday season, that's a common conversation that I'm having with clients now is, you know, how can they kind of navigate some of these temptations and situations where maybe a lot of people may be overeating, or there might be a lot of food temptations or alcohol and some of these things that, you know, are a little bit challenging. So it's kind of just having a conversation and thinking about what that environment looks like to kind of prepare for it so that there's a sort of a strategy in place on, for example, what a patient is planning on doing if somebody asks them if they want a drink, if they want a glass of wine, and maybe they don't want to have it. The good thing is that a lot of patients patients on these medications are have less desire to drink alcohol. So that's just one other positive. That's not everyone. So just as an example, that can be, you know, a common challenging situation for someone to choose not to have alcohol in those environments, but planning ahead on how you're going to respond to that question, and you know, helping patients sort of have like sort of a script or just something in the back of their mind in place on how they're going to respond to maybe people around them, because the people, not just the environment, can make a difference and can positively or negatively impact a patient's habits. And then if they know what type of food will be around, or if they're going to a restaurant setting, you know, taking a look at the menu ahead of time so that they're prepared, and maybe make their choice beforehand so that they're not, you know, kind of deciding on a whim, which is a little bit harder to make a better decision in those situations. Just like meal planning can be helpful because, you know, when we're meal planning at home and we're recommending that to patients ahead of time, they are planning ahead in when they are in a healthy mindset versus planning a meal at the last minute when they're starving, which is they're less likely to make a good choice. And so it's kind of the same sort of mentality when planning ahead for these more challenging situations.
Okay, great. So it's kind of the same. It's just like keep being intentional and doing your homework and planning ahead and keeping your goals at the back of your mind. I guess these wouldn't be as relevant as the patients that are actively on treatment because a lot of their cravings and appetite is suppressed, but I guess afterwards, like building these habits, right?
Right. And even planning for, you know, another sort of challenge may be that maybe, you know, a patient that is on a GLP-1 is going to, you know, one of these environments that maybe the people that they're with don't know that they're taking a GLP-1 and so that can be maybe a challenging situation too, where they're eating less. And then if people are asking them like why they're eating less, whether on a GLP-1 or not, right? Like that could be another challenging situation that people may experience when people are sort of questioning why they're changing, why they're doing something that's out of their norm. You know, I often just tell people, you know, tell patients that it's, you know, I feel better when I do this. Like that's a good script to use in many of those situations because it doesn't really invite, you know, more of a conversation around it. It's kind of like, well, I feel better when I do this. So this is why I choose to do this.
That's a great idea. Honestly, it's a great kind of thing to give them that they can fall back on when they're kind of in these situations where they're uncomfortable, they're feeling pressured. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I'm actually really interested about, and I've been hearing it a lot, is that there's this kind of appetite increase, which kind of goes beyond their baseline appetite when patients get off. It's kind of like a rebound. I've been looking into it and I'm hearing a lot of how it's physiological. So your body kind of wants to go back to its natural weight. And because of that, your metabolism slows down and basically your body is working against you and it wants you to gain the weight back. So have you been seeing this in practice where patients are coming back with a huge appetite increase after they wean off of the drugs?
Yeah. So definitely it depends on the person. The experiences vary, but yes, in general, appetite does return after coming off, but it's not typically instant or like this huge rebound. You know, there are a few cases where that might happen where, you know, within the first few weeks, their appetite is significantly increased more than it was before. But in general, it's usually takes about 5 to 7 weeks at least. And this is what we're seeing in the research too, to start having that appetite increase because, it takes a little bit for the medication to completely, get out of their system. And so it doesn't happen instantly. So there are, this is why though, it's really critical during that time when somebody first comes off the medication to kind of prepare for that, and kind of prepare for that time. And really focus on those more satiating foods like the high protein, high fiber, still continuing to have to be on a schedule, to be on a meal schedule, all the things that they were doing before, because then it's more habitual. And this is where the exercise component can be even more helpful because a lot of research shows, and I see in my own practice too, the patients that are very highly active. So sometimes even more than what the general recommendation is, which is anywhere from 150 minutes a week to 300 minutes a week for those trying to lose weight. a higher level of physical activity is going to be helpful for preventing weight regain when coming off these medications. And that's where it's shown that it could be even more beneficial during that time period. So, so yes, to kind of short answer that question, it is common. Most patients will, I do see their appetite coming back. It's not always more than it was before. But depending on how long they've been on the medication, sometimes those that are on the medication longer actually have more of an appetite increase. And we still don't know the reason for that yet. But it may potentially be that the patients that are on these medications longer are not able to produce, GLP-1 endogenously, for a little while, because they were taking the medication for so long. And so there's more research needs to be done on that, but there are a couple of small studies that sort of allude to that.
Okay. So the bottom line is, it's really building these healthy habits that are sustainable over the long term, that will really help patients maintain the weight loss and just live overall better quality of life, and where they're more mindful and they're able to kind of shut out that food noise and focus on.
Exactly. Yes, it's like you kind of taking advantage of the time that they are on the GLP-1 medication. Hopefully they can stay on it long term. But if not, then they're building those habits, and it's a bit easier to build those habits while their appetite is controlled. And so then if in any situation that they find themselves in the future, it's going to set them up for the most success.
Well, perfect. So I think we'll wrap it up here. Thank you so much, Melissa, for taking the time and speaking with us. I know this is a really big area of interest for a lot of people. People are really curious with the whole nutritional side of things, the whole muscle preservation. And I do think that diet is really the backbone when it comes to weight loss. All these other things are really supplements. So it was great getting your insights and speaking to you.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that too. As you said, nutrition is paramount. If anything, it's even more important now. And with these patients, it's not, these medications, again, are extremely effective, but they are the most effective when alongside all of these other diet and lifestyle habits. So really my final takeaway to your listeners would be is for us to all work together, right? As clinicians, registered dietitians, researchers, I know you have a lot of researchers that come on here, and you're a researcher yourself. So, you know, we all need to just continue to communicate with each other, collaborate, and just work together so we can optimize patient care for these patients.
I think a multidisciplinary approach is always the way to go. Everyone has their own expertise, and it's always great to get different, opinions and expertise on this show. So thank you so much. And to the listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the GLP-1 podcast show. Please be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And we hope to see you back very soon on this podcast.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.